This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Well, this is episode number 211. I'm in the Handgun World mobile studio, cruising through Houston, Texas right now. Actually headed way down to Laredo, Texas. I am recording this on the 18th of December. And so you're not going to hear this until out into the future. Now, in the last episode, which was the middle of the week podcast that went out last Wednesday, I told you that you were not going to hear any more podcasts until the end of the year. Well, that's what I thought when I recorded that episode, but I had an opportunity here to do an interview and to create another show. So while you're listening to this, if you're listening on time, unless you're far behind, I'm on vacation. So it's great talking to you from the past or talking out into the future, at least right now, for me, however you want to look at this. But I'm out enjoying a much-needed vacation. I am not anywhere near any kind of internet or phone service that's easily accessible. That's about all I'll say on that. And I'll be back before the end of the year. So I'll be back to doing some more shows regularly every week after January 1st. So this is going to get released a couple of days before Christmas. Let me just say once again, Merry Christmas to you and your family, and I hope it's going well. Again, there will not be a show next Sunday. There will not be a show coming out next Sunday because while I'm on vacation, I'm really not going to have time to prepare a podcast. So bear with me, give me a week off, and we'll start regularly scheduling or regularly releasing these shows a week from next Sunday. And because I'm driving, I don't know what all those dates are, but anyway, you'll figure it out. Well, since the last two recordings, the awful tragedy of the shooting of at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut, happened. The last two episodes that I recorded were before that tragedy. My interview with John Hodaway last Sunday about a student, a host, and an instructor was done before that tragic shooting. And my recent Middle of the Week podcast with Glenn Tate was done long before that. Folks, I am saddened just like all of you. And there are not really words to describe what happened. Well, yes, there are. There are words to describe. And if you've been following my Facebook page, I put those words in print. And I put them on my Facebook page. So check it out. There really is a clear explanation to this. There really is a clear explanation to what happened. You know what the problem is? A lot of people just don't get it. They just don't get it. That's all I'll say. You'll get it if you read my Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast. If you want to follow it, facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast. Podcast. It'll take you right there. My username is actually Handgun World Show, which is the old name of my podcast. It's, by the way, Handgun World's all one word. Some people like to make it two words. It's harder to find me that way. Handgun World Podcast, facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast. If you send me a friend request after hearing this episode, give me some time. Give me about a week before I accept it, because as I mentioned, while I'm on vacation, I won't have very easy access to internet. So, folks, we need to fight. That's what I'm saying. Once we're finished grieving, and I'm a father, so I am grieving like everybody else over that tragedy. Once we finished, it is time to fight. I got to tell you, I got to say something to all of my freedom-loving friends who are listening to this. You know, for 210 episodes, you have stuck with me and you've listened. And I've talked about a tremendous amount of topics. And I very much appreciate you sticking with me. I am so humbled. This show and our gun rights, it will evaporate if we don't fight. If you like my podcast and many of the others out there on the Gun Rights Radio Network, for example, the Pro Arms podcast, the Road Gunner podcast, the Power Factor show, the Politics and Guns podcast, the Gunfighter cast, who's not really on this network anymore, but those guys do a great job. If you like shows like this, the Gun Runner podcast, who's not on the Gun Rights Radio Network, but also does a great job. Even Tom Gresham's Gun Talk, the radio show every Sunday. Wow, man, I just listened to the December 17th episode, woo, or 16th episode, where he just did nothing but talk about the tragic shooting. If you like what we do, and if you like the firearms and the freedom that you possess, folks, I'm telling you, you better fight, because they are bringing the fight to us. And I'm talking about the anti-gunners. I'm talking about Dianne Feinstein. I'm talking about Chuck Schumer. I'm talking about all of the people out there that are ignorant. And I'm, you know, that might be harsh words. You might be saying, well, Bob, you shouldn't call people ignorant. You're never going to win them over. Here's what I think. I believe there are more freedom-loving, gun-loving people than there are anti-gunners. I believe that we outnumber them. So I think we need to defeat them. It's not a matter of changing their minds. You might pick off a few. You might change their minds. You might be nice. You know, Tom Gresham is urging us to be persuasive. Well, I'm in the people business. I'm in the sales business. And so I have to be persuasive every day. But there comes a point in time where you're just not going to get through. And there are some anti-gunners that think that this whole tragedy was purely the gun's fault. They think it's high-capacity magazines and semi-automatic AR-15s. They think that's the problem. They don't understand that when you shoot an AR-15, it's one trigger pull, one bullet fired. That's it. They don't understand that semi-automatic weapons have been around for over 100 years. Right? The 1911 is a semi-automatic pistol. The semi-automatic pistol, the 1911, was developed over 100 years ago. Semi-automatic weapons have been used since World War I, approximately. Semi-automatic weapons are used every day by hunters. Many duck hunters use semi-automatic shotguns. Many big game hunters use semi-automatic rifles. An AR-15 is a semi-automatic weapon, just like all of the weapons that have been used for 100 years. The only small difference is you can insert a magazine that holds more than 10 rounds. Wow, big deal. Okay? These anti-gunners have no idea that a person with a minimal amount of training can perform a reload in a couple seconds. A couple of seconds. If you limit the magazines to 10 rounds, these bad guys will learn how to reload. And they'll learn how to carry 5 or 6 magazines with them and reload the gun in a couple seconds. If he's in a gun-free zone, who's going to stop him from reloading? Isn't it insane? So they think that that's what the problem is. And they don't get it. They don't get it that the fact that the problem here is evil. The problem is mentally unstable people. And until America and the world understand that evil exists, and until America understands that that's the world we live in, that it's here, it exists among us, guess what? Get over it. None of us like the fact that evil exists. None of us, including me, like the fact that when I drop my son off at school, that he's a sitting duck in a gun-free zone. I don't like that. That makes me uncomfortable. Why does he have to be a sitting duck in a gun-free zone? At the time of this recording, a Texas school district has gone public with the fact that they're allowing their teachers to carry guns. Ben Branham and I have offered any teacher or school administrator the opportunity to take one of our classes for free. Any of the classes that Ben Branham and I do called Beyond Concealed Carry, or any of the beginner classes that we've got scheduled through June 30th, I'm calling on all of you teachers in Texas. Through June 30th, 2013, you are welcome to come to one of our one-day classes for free. We don't teach CHL classes, but you don't have to have a CHL to come through our class. If you want to get your CHL, or if you already have your concealed handgun license in the state of Texas, that's terrific. Ben and I will teach you how to fight and win. That's what we're going to teach you how to do. We're both NRA instructors. Ben has plenty of military combat experience. And boy, I tell you what, when you take one of our classes, his military combat experience really is a huge asset to what we teach. I teach you a civilian perspective to conceal carry, because that's what I am. I'm civilian. My background does not come from military or law enforcement or being a gunsmith. My background comes from being an everyday guy who wants to keep himself protected. And that's what you're going to get. So, teachers, school teachers, email me, bob@handgunworld.com. If you're an administrator, if you're a principal, assistant principal, vice principal, whatever, email me, bob@handgunworld.com. Space is limited. bob@handgunworld.com. That's my email address. Space is limited. Get signed up. In San Antonio, we have a class March 16th. In Dallas-Fort Worth, we have a class March 2nd. Before June 30th, we'll probably be taking the class to Houston. Let me know. Get signed up. Okay, let's get to the main topic. John Payne, one of my mentors, one of my firearms mentors from Suarez International, joined me. We had a discussion 24 hours after the tragic shooting. And we talked about a little bit about the tragic shooting. We also talked about what a police officer thinks when he responds to a shooting. John Payne is a law enforcement officer in the state of Texas. Firearms training is sort of a side job that he does very well with. His full-time job is a law enforcement officer, and he's responded to many calls about people with guns. He's responded to calls that he receives, man with a gun, or somebody's threatening somebody with a gun. And, you know, doesn't it make you wonder, what did those first responders at Sandy Hook Elementary, what did they think? What was going through their mind? Wow. Wow. I mean, you know, this reaffirms in my mind that law enforcement officers, they don't get paid enough for what they do. I really respect law enforcement, any first responder, as much as I respect military personnel. Thank you to all of you for your service. I did not serve in the military. I did not serve in law enforcement. Doing this podcast is kind of my way of serving and giving back. Thank you for what you do. So you're going to hear John Payne's perspective after we get done talking about the shooting. You're going to hear John Payne's perspective of what a law enforcement officer thinks about when he responds to a call that he receives about a man with a gun, or that there's an active shooter or a shooting in progress. So here comes a quick sound effect, and when the interview is over, I will wrap it up. Stay tuned. Okay, my guest this episode, John Payne from Suarez International, is back on the Handgun World podcast. John, welcome back.
Thanks a lot, Bob. It's an honor to be back, but not under these circumstances.
I know. And for people listening, we're recording this approximately 24 hours after most of the country heard the news about the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary in Connecticut. So we have a couple topics to talk about, that being one of them. And we're also going to talk, since John is a law enforcement officer in Texas, we're going to talk about his experience when he has received calls to show up at the scene of a shooting. We're right, John?
Absolutely, Bob.
Okay. Well, let's first of all talk about this horrible, senseless, awful tragedy. in Connecticut. A couple of things I want to start off. We're not going to get political here, folks, but we're going to talk about some other things that were as it relates to the shooting. A few things that I want to add or start off with. And this might be controversial. It's not political, but even if though it's controversial, I don't care because it needs to be said. And I think what we have all come to realize is that there is evil in this world. And I think we saw, well, we didn't see it, but we heard about a demonstration of just plain, pure evil. And I don't know any other way to put it.
I don't either, Bob. I really don't know how to describe it. You know, a lot of people want to believe that somebody has to be insane to do something like what was done. But the problem I have with that is that the majority of these people that do this end up taking their lives before they can be their own lives, before they can be held accountable for their actions.
And there is nothing in my mind more cowardly than that.
So if they were so out of control that they didn't know what they were doing, then why weren't they willing to be arrested?
Well, that's a good point, which tells me that this guy knew what he was doing.
You know, and I'm not going to pretend to be a subject matter expert here. But, you know, and we've talked before, Bob. You know, I survived a school shooting in 1983-84 time frame, nowhere near on this magnitude. There was two people that died that day, and that would be the shooter and his girlfriend, but she was not a student. Her son was. So I was present for that. I saw everything go down. And so I've got a little idea of what goes through someone's mind when that's happening. But for this person to be labeled crazy or whatever else, it's kind of an insult to me. I was really angry yesterday. And anger doesn't even really cover it. You know, 4 years ago would have been December 1st, 2008. You know, I lost my daughter to a reckless driver, and it's forever changed my life and the holiday seasons for our family.
Yep.
Now, the person that committed this crime against my family is incarcerated. But in this instance, you have, you know, 20 babies, children, small children. In my mind, you know, my age now, someone that's 18 years old is still a baby to me. You know, and I don't mean that to be condescending or insulting. It's just even at 18, they really haven't experienced life yet.
Right.
So here you have 20 children that were taken from their parents. At this time of year, like you and I discussed a few moments ago off the air, I imagine there are still presents under the trees that'll never be opened, that were bought, or, you know, were bought for these children.
That's a horrible thought.
And you really can't tell me that there's any way to explain what this monster has done. You know, I really don't care about the why. You're not going to fix somebody like this, in my opinion. The only thing that you can hope to do in the future is to stop someone like this.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I 100% agree. I'm glad you said that, John. The only way to get rid of people like this is to defeat them. You have to defeat them and stop them. You can't fix them. You know, you've got to defeat them. And again, without getting political and arguing the merits of gun control or anything like that, people are just going to have to fight back. You're just going to have to defeat them. That's all. You know, I hear a lot of talk now about, well, what's the root cause of this? I don't think people want to hear the root cause of this. I think I know what it is, but I don't think people want to come to grips with it. I kind of hinted at it in the beginning of this. It's pure evil. And the only way to stop evil is to fight back at it, in my opinion.
I believe you're spot on, Bob. I really don't see... at any point, has one of these incidents taken place anywhere that was not a gun-free zone?
Technically, I don't Well, was the movie theater in Colorado a gun-free zone?
Yes, it was. It was off-limits to CHL holders, to the best of my knowledge.
Well, has it ever taken place in a non-gun-free zone? I don't know. I'm sure somewhere it has, but let's look at the percentage. How often does it happen in a gun-free zone? Almost all the time.
You know, this guy, like I mentioned, I won't even say his name on the air. He doesn't deserve that. I get the feeling, and I could be completely off base here, but I get the feeling that some of these monsters are fueled by the media, that they see these other people commit these atrocities, and the media tells their entire life story, interviews all their neighbors, interviews all their family. I don't know what they're looking for, but if notoriety has anything to do with it, look how many stories have been published about this guy so far.
Yep.
They can't even decide which firearms were used in this.
Yep, that's right. You're right. I think your point about the media, John, is also spot on. You know, these people get sensationalized. You know, this goes back to, the name of that guy that did all that shooting at University of Texas back in the 60s. I can't remember his name right offhand.
Last name was Whitman, was it not?
Charles Whitman. It goes back all the way. You know, look how much notoriety he got. And
he still does.
He still does, exactly.
And, matter of fact, you know, my wife's grandfather was there when it occurred.
Really?
That's something that I learned. I met my wife a few years after he passed away, but that's one of the things that she and her grandmother told me about, was him being present there at the actual side of the shooting while it was in progress.
Well, yeah, you know, the media sensationalizes these people, and for weeks and weeks, like you said, their life story and all the notoriety, and even if they kill themselves, which most of them do after they do something like this, you know, they get their fame. They get whatever it was that they were looking for by doing an evil act like this. Now, I understand they're disturbed, very disturbed people, but they're looking for notoriety, and they sure as heck get it, don't they?
Yes, they do, and that's another reason that I refuse to mention the name.
Yeah. I don't blame you. And so, yeah, perhaps the media has something to do with this. Now, before people get angry with me, John and I are not saying the media causes this, but I think in a way they perpetuate or they give way too much notoriety to these people.
But do you think it's the media that gives them too much access? Or am I saying this right? That puts the story out there entirely too much, or do you think we just have more access to the news and media now?
Both.
I mean, you know, 20 years ago, it would take you several days to get any written communication from, you know, my home to someplace in Europe or Asia or something else, and now it's instantaneous.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I think... let's talk about some facts here. These are facts, and folks, you can look them up. This kind of stuff rarely happens, and this kind of stuff is happening with less frequency than it used to. Mass murders do not happen as much now as they used to even 20 or 30 years ago. As a matter of fact, I'll put a link in the show notes proving that. I'll find some data. I was looking at it today. But we think they happen more because of how newsworthy it becomes. Now, I'm not making light of 20 innocent children being murdered. It's the most horrible thing I can think of. I'm just saying that we, you know, like you said earlier, that guy's name, whose name I won't say anyway, is all over the place, and it will be. And anybody thinking about doing something like he did will look at that and they'll go, oh, wow. Look how much instant access everybody has to the information. Gee, if I do the same thing, I'm going to instantly be famous. I know that sounds sick and twisted, but it's the way it is.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. You know, and like I said, I don't know if you can actually blame the media for getting information out there, but our access to the media and having it at our fingertips 24/7. I mean, when I was a kid, my parents used to wait for the news to come on.
Yeah.
And now you've got the news 24/7 at your fingertips.
Yep.
So, you know, it's not like they can't report on the story.
Right.
So, you know, what do you do?
Well, I know. You're right. And you know, I mean, all you got to do is turn on any of the cable news networks. They're on 24 hours a day broadcasting news. You're right. I remember, you know, I'm 51 years old. So I remember when I was a kid, there was no such thing as 24-hour news. We had to wait.
24-hour TV back then, Bob.
That's correct.
The TV shut down all channels with ABC, NBC, CBS shut off at midnight.
Exactly. And they certainly didn't stream news. And, of course, there was no internet access where you could get news all the time. Yeah, it's just way too easy to get news. And the sick, twisted people that do this sort of thing, they know that.
You know, the answer, in my mind, is to have more shepherds guarding the flock. I mean, for Pete's sake, our inmates have more protection than our school children.
Oh, good point. Wow.
Now, it's kind of ridiculous that, you know, one person can cause this much damage, and you can't blame the tool. I read something today posted by one of the members of Warrior Talk where he cited a school bombing in like 1927 that still holds the record for the most innocent lives lost. But no one talks about that because, well, something else was used besides a firearm. And, you know, I don't know what people – you know what, I'm not going to go – part of the subject. I'm just not going to go there. But I will say that this beast broke the law in order to do what he did.
Yeah, he did. He certainly did. And let me, I just looked it up, what you were talking about. In 1927, a guy named Donald Huffman, and this took place in Michigan. He killed 38 people. He planted a bomb at the school, and he killed 38 people. Oh, I'm sorry. Donald Huffman was a student who was there. I'm sorry. I'm reading a story. He's recalling what happened. He was a student there that actually survived. So, my bad. But yes, there was a school bombing in Michigan in 1927, folks. Okay? Took the lives of 45 people, including 38 children. 38 children with a bomb. He didn't use an AR-15. He didn't use a Glock handgun or a Sig Sauer or an AR-15 or an AK. All right? So where are all the people wanting to ban bombs? I mean, come on. This is ridiculous here.
Well, it's already illegal unless you have a licensed manufacturer for you to have something in your possession.
Exactly.
Now, I don't know what the laws were in 1927, and I won't pretend to know what they were. The point of what you just said, in my opinion, is that if you have someone hell-bent on doing evil, they're going to find a way to do it.
Yeah, and if a guy back in 1927 can make a bomb and bomb a school, can't somebody in 2012 do the same thing? Absolutely.
You know, how long was it after September 11th that they finally got on board and decided to start allowing pilots to be armed?
I don't know.
You know, it wasn't that long. And, you know, quite honestly, I still have a son in school. I have a son that's a senior this year. And I would not have an issue in this world with some responsible teachers moving forward in getting their license, get the training that they need, to be able to protect themselves and their students.
Well, let me give you an example, and then I have something else interesting to talk about. A church friend of mine, his wife works at a private school here in San Antonio. And his wife received a call today from the administrator of that school. I'm obviously not going to mention any names. The administrator of the school called my friend and asked him where was a good place in San Antonio to purchase a firearm, because he wants to be armed while he's running the school. So,
how can you fault somebody for not wanting to be made helpless?
You can't. You can't fault somebody for that.
You just can't wish this stuff away.
No, you can't. Okay, here's some more interesting info. I just looked this up. May 18th, 1927, it occurred Bath School in Bath, Michigan. Listen to this. A guy used dynamite and pyrrhotol. Pyrrhotol is a military surplus explosive used by farmers for blowing stumps. He wired it to a battery and a timer, and he blew away the entire north wing of the Bath Consolidated School Building, killing 38 children and 3 adults. The guy's name, I won't say, because even though that was a long time ago, he doesn't deserve any credit anyway. I'll put a link.
He actually set up more than just that one wing, and they failed to detonate?
That is correct. Yeah, you guys and folks who are listening to this, there'll be a link in the show notes. Go read that article. But if this can happen back in 1927, if a guy can take dynamite and pyrrhotol, which is a military surplus explosive, put it together, wire it to a battery and a timer, come on. This can happen today. And if I don't care, go ahead, ban all the AR-15s, take them out of people's hands, and the next time a crazy person like this guy yesterday in Connecticut wants to do something, he'll copy what this guy in 1927 did, or he'll find something even more sophisticated in the year 2012 or 2013. So give me a break.
Yeah, laws written on paper aren't going to solve this problem. You and I both know that entirely
yep.
too well.
Yep.
But you know what? At the same time, one of the reasons that I really don't want to get into the gun control debate for this topic is, number one, I think it's really shows a low amount of class to bring up a topic like that when you have 20 children and 6 adults that are no longer with us because of this monster.
Yeah,
I'm not going to stand on a soapbox and beat my chest, because the people that need to hear this message, that don't believe it, they're not going to believe me anyway. Now, I'm talking to the people that actually know that it's their responsibility to take care of themselves. It's their responsibility to take care of their children or see that they're taken care of. I mean, who in their right mind would believe that dropping your child off at school would result in you never seeing them again?
I know it. I know it. And, yeah, I know it. Well,
you know, I've seen here just recently, of course, this is something I've known about for some time, but, you know, school teachers go armed in Israel.
Yes, they do.
And they don't seem to have some of these problems that we have.
No. Nope.
Now, at the same time, I also understand some other dynamics. So I've got school teachers in my family. And, in fact, my oldest sister is a school teacher. And she's approached me recently and before any of this happened and asked me about at least getting some basic knowledge about handguns and, you know, which end to point towards the berm and all that stuff. But besides educating her about how it works and how to make it safe and everything else, I would never have any illusion that she's going to take 3 or 4 classes and spend, you know, 8 hours a month on dry practice and running drills. It's just never going to happen. That's not the kind of person she is.
Right.
She's a very nurturing, caring person. She would never hurt somebody intentionally. Now, you get between someone like that and their children, that's a little different story at times. You know, there's nothing more dangerous than a mother bear.
That's right.
But, there's a large percentage of the people out there that are drawn to the educational world that are more nurturers. And, you know, it's just not common, in my opinion, to have the ability to take a life and nurture life come out equally in the same person. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. And I want people to understand, you know what? I too am grieving from this. I'm a father. And John, I know that you've lost a child, and it's unfathomable. I can't think of that. And like you, and you're right. What person, when they drop their kindergartner off for school, thinks that that's the last time that they're ever going to see him? That's just, yes, we have to do something about this, and not to open up the argument as to what to do about it, but yes, something has to be done. There are clear answers. That's not really the purpose of this podcast, but your points about the media, very good ones.
Like I said, and I don't mean to jab the media with a pointed stick. I really don't.
No.
But I think that it does add fuel to the fire, so to speak. And once again, like you mentioned, this is not a common thing.
Nope.
But it's just horrendous nonetheless. I mean, I have an idea of what some of these parents are going through. The parts that I can't fathom is, you know, the monster here in this situation removed any chance of ever having any closure for those parents.
Yep.
You know, there's never a reason. I don't care what they say about this, that, and the other prescription medications or never diagnosed. I don't care about that. You know, somebody knew this guy. Somebody knew him.
That's right.
But to the parents, you know, there's absolutely nothing that you can do. Nothing that's going to fill that emptiness.
No, there's nothing. And I think that's the feeling that a lot of us are feeling right now, is a helpless feeling. We want to help, but there's absolutely nothing that we can do. We can do nothing but mourn, you know, and let this sink in deep and realize what we're dealing with here. And that's what I pray right now, is that people really realize what we're dealing with. And I'll just leave it at this, and we'll move on because we have something else to talk about. But what we're dealing with here has absolutely nothing to do with gun control. Zero.
You know, well, what we're dealing with is, like you've said so many times before, it's just plain evil.
It is.
There's no other way to put it. And for those that do not have faith, what would you call it?
I know.
Because, you know, I really can't say much more about this besides that I'm still angry about it. Probably will be for some time. And now, also across my desk, wasn't there another incident in a mall yesterday? Or did you hear anything about that, Bob?
It was a few days ago. And today, Saturday, the 15th of December, the day after the horrible school shooting, there was another shooting today in a hospital. A guy killed two or three people in a hospital. I don't know if you're aware of that, but I just saw that come across the news wire.
Let me see.
So there are some disturbed people out there.
A mall in Oregon that I'm thinking of?
Clackamas, Oregon. There was a mall shooting. Yes, a couple days.
That situation, there was a citizen there with the CHL that I believe, my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, if you found that story, he was with a friend of his, and his friend had a child. Heard three shots. The friend hit the deck with the child. This guy took cover. And while the bad guy was fumbling with the rifle, he produced his handgun. Had mentioned in the story about a bad background, afraid that he might not hit his intended target. But the gist of the story is that the bad guy saw a good guy that was armed and ready to respond, and instead the last two shots he shot himself with.
Yeah. You know, and that shows you what can happen when a bad guy sees that a good guy wants to stop him.
So, and let's look at the unfortunate part of this, whether it be a mall. You've been in my classes. I use a mall as an example a whole lot. And one of the reasons I use a mall is because, well, people congregate there. People yep. congregate in churches. People congregate at malls. People congregate at schools. You know, any place where you have the real estate for a large group of people to gather would probably be attractive to one of these monsters. But anyway, this guy producing the firearm. Oh, I'm sorry, I almost lost my train of thought. There were two people whose lives were taken besides the shooter.
Right.
The unfortunate part for us as armed citizens out there is we're going to be reacting to the incident.
Yep. Yep.
And that's just the facts of life. We're going to be reacting. More than likely, this guy, this gal, whatever, is going to get shots off. And that's what's going to clue you in that something is not right here.
Exactly. And once somebody is clued in, if there would have been somebody, anybody, even just one person in that school that could have fought back, that would have had the ability to fight back, it most likely would have slowed that guy down. And yeah, there still might have been some damage and casualties, but it might have been prevented. Or not prevented, but stopped, slowed down, fewer casualties, whatever. The problem is there were defenseless, innocent children and adults in that school, which is a gun-free zone. And you mentioned it earlier when we first started. You asked me how many of this stuff happens in zones that are not gun-free zones. You don't see too many people walking into a gun store doing this or a police officer building doing this, or you don't see him walking into a gun range and doing this, or you don't see him walking into a lot of places where they know that there's a likelihood that people will have firearms and do something like this.
Bob, even at Fort Hood, that mobility processing center, those soldiers were not armed.
Yes, a gun-free zone inside of Fort Hood. They're not armed. That guy knew that. You know, all right, and it kind of leads us to our next topic. I want to correct something I said. This shooting that happened today at the hospital in Alabama, the gunman wounded three people. He did not kill them. The police shot the perp dead. So congratulations to the police.
Absolutely.
Birmingham, Alabama cops apparently shot the guy dead. So the cops saved the day. And that's good. Wouldn't bother me. I'll pay more tax dollars to have more armed policemen inside of schools. You know, by all means, let's do it. The problem is there's just not enough security.
So what we're talking about now is what goes through an officer's mind when they get that shots fired call.
Yeah, and that was the primary reason I wanted you to come on the show, because you are a police officer in Texas, and you've answered calls of shots being fired, haven't you?
I've answered several, and I would have thought when I went to work in a small municipality in southeast Texas that that would be uncommon, but it happened more times than I would care for it to happen. My very first one to respond to as a civilian officer, you get the call of shots fired. Everything in your mind at that point becomes a clean slate momentarily, ready to receive information.
Mm-hmm.
Because that dispatcher is your lifeline. Any information that they can give you before you get there is very pertinent. So the very first one was a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Okay.
And I was in training. And I will admit wholeheartedly that God really loves children and protects fools. Because I was so focused on getting there and beginning, my job, that once I got there, I almost pulled into the driveway. Mm-hmm. I had a very seasoned field training officer. I don't know if I said FTO a while ago, did I?
Said what?
FTO, it stands for, Field Training Officer Program.
No, you didn't mention that.
Okay. If I said FTO, that's what it means, Field Training Officer. And that's once you've been through the academy and you get hired by an agency, you have to go through a training program and then be certified to work the street on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm nearing the last phase of my training program. And we get the call of shots fired, possible self-inflicted gunshot wound. And in my haste to get to the location, to the residence where this happened, I almost pulled up the driveway. Like I said, I had a well-seasoned training officer.
Mm-hmm.
We're allowed in the residence, handle it just like someone is waiting to shoot us. Because let's face it, if someone wants to hurt themselves, they really don't care about you.
No.
Okay? And sure enough, thank goodness this guy's marksmanship skills were very shoddy, because he used a .22 rifle, of all things, to shoot himself in the chest.
Really?
But he flinched so horribly that the .22 shell, the whole angle of the muzzle must have changed by about 6 inches while he was pressing the trigger. I'm still not sure how he pressed it or jerked it. The round bounced off of his rib, hit the headboard of his bed, and went out the window.
Oh, really?
Exactly, because he's laying on the bed, and I'm telling my training officer, I can't believe this guy really did it. I can't believe this guy really did it. There's a hole in his shirt, gunpowder residue around the hole. And I'm like, this doesn't look anything like TV. And the paramedics lift his shirt, and he's just got it looks like someone burned him with the end of a coat hanger. He's just got a little groove.
Wow.
Skin, and then we see the hole on the edge of the headboard and a broken window. It bounced off his rib, went through the window. So that was the very first one that I went to. And like I said, on the way there, only thing I'm thinking is, number one, how quickly can I get there? Number two, is this guy actually shot himself? Has somebody else shot him? Is there somebody else still there that's armed? And the weapon was still on the bed. It's the first thing that we did once we made it into his room was to secure that weapon.
Hmm.
Okay. And the guy ended up being just fine. I mean, he was transported to the hospital. Of course, we didn't transport him. We secured the scene. And bear in mind, paramedics, EMTs are not coming on the scene until it is secured. Till the police say, okay, it's safe to come in.
Okay.
So, if you have someone bleeding there, I'll do the best I can for them. But, for people thinking about getting some type of medical training beyond first aid, be aware that crime scenes are crime scenes, and that the emergency medicine people do not come in until the scene has been secured.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, anyhow, that was the very first one. The next one that I recall was a neighbor calling in about a man shooting an AR-15 in his backyard. This is inside of a city.
Okay.
Once again, I'm thinking, why is someone shooting a rifle in their backyard?
Yeah.
I've got an address. I've got a description.
John, what went through your mind when you got the call, a man shooting a rifle in his backyard?
I hope I see him before he sees me.
Okay.
That's one of the first things with my mind. I hope I'm in a position to where I can see him before he sees me. There's a large difference between a proactive and reactive shooting. And I would much rather be in a proactive situation than a reactive.
Of course.
But, you know, there's a thousand things going through your mind. You know, is this for real? Is someone actually doing this? What is he shooting at? Is he shooting somebody else? You know, what's this going to turn into? As you're getting there, you know, where is he exactly? Can I park at a distance away and move up on foot to where he doesn't see me? Can I get a position of cover to challenge him to get him to drop that rifle?
Okay. So you're going through tactics in your mind.
Absolutely. And that's not just these calls. It's any call that we respond to. You begin thinking in your mind, okay, if this happens, I'm going to do this. If that happens, I'm going to do that. You try to think of every possible scenario and every answer to that scenario before you ever get there.
Okay.
One of the things I really hated when I was working patrol was being surprised.
Yeah.
I like to have an answer for each problem that I address. Anyway, I was able to get into position of cover. I did see him or locate him before he saw me. I challenged him. He set the rifle down. He followed my commands. Basically did a felony takedown, felony stop.
Mm-hmm.
Got him cuffed up, got him secured. And he had no reason at all for doing that other than he was just kind of being stupid. Once again, y'all, I won't go into where it was, but in that location, there was no city ordinance against discharging a firearm in the city limits.
Okay, so he wasn't breaking a law.
Well, actually, I would say that would fall under disorderly conduct, unreasonable noise.
Okay.
That's called creative police work.
Okay.
Sometimes you have to look at the totality of the situation. Was it illegal for him to discharge a firearm in his backyard? No. Was it safe? No. This individual had other problems. Eventually, he ended up doing enough things that cost him his Second Amendment rights. The scary part was not knowing how he was going to be on any given day.
Yeah. So when you showed up there, what did you find?
Well, I found him with his rifle. Like I said, and he did heed my commands. I did place him at a disadvantage. I took care of my business, made sure that I was safe and the people around us, you know, were safe. And I did what I was allowed to do. That's something that a lot of people don't understand. They think that when they watch TV and they see officers able to do all these things to solve a crime or to stop a crime, in the real world, there are rules and guidelines that we have to follow, and that's why we're the good guys. Bad guys don't follow the same rule book we do.
Okay.
Okay. Tell you what, Bob, one of the most interesting ones I went to.
Yeah.
This call was not one that put me on pins and needles when I got it, but it's another shots fired call. Responded to a rather well-to-do neighborhood with a gunshot victim. When I got to the house, was greeted at the door. My partner and I went in. Everything was, you know, calmed down at that point, and we were able to secure the firearm and set it away from where we were talking. And it's not because we were worried about anyone shooting us. It's just one less thing to have to worry about.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And in this instance, an employer was telling his employee how she really needed a firearm to protect herself. And invited her over and spoke with his wife, and they are having a conversation, and evidently there was some alcohol involved. And while showing her his revolver, he shot her in the calf.
Oh, no.
She was in fairly good spirits, especially for having been shot. There was a 38 special, but,
you shot her in the leg, in the calf, you said, right?
Shot through and through. Didn't okay. touch bone. She was very lucky in that regard, but, you know, it was an interesting call nonetheless. And, I'm not sure how it ever turned out between the firearms owner and the district attorney and any civil issues as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. But like I said, that was another one that was kind of interesting. Telling someone they need protection and they actually need protection from you. And then one of the ones that was my least favorite calls was a shots fired call in a RV park at about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh boy.
Once again, no locations, no names or anything of that nature. But this would involve a 12 gauge shotgun. There was a couple that had a history of abusing prescription medication. And as the story goes, they got into an argument over who was getting the next couple of pills or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
He forcibly removed her from the RV. And she got angry and pulled the door open, where she met the muzzle of a 12-gauge shotgun.
Whoa.
And, you know, I don't know whether she grabbed the shotgun or whether he just shot her, but she was hit in the neck. I got there probably about 3 or 4 minutes after it occurred. You know, it was something to behold because I had known this person when she was alive. And she looked kind of different. She didn't get hit in the face. And I don't mean like that, but she looked different being dead, so to speak. It took me a second to recognize who she was.
Mm-hmm.
She had an obvious gunshot wound to the neck. And there was still steam coming off of the wound.
Oh.
He tried to give us the story that she had done it to herself. And there were several indicators there that he wasn't telling the truth. And we actually, after we secured everything and started the investigation, a witness came forward to tell us what happened. So those are the ones that I can think of off the top of my mind. Each time that I was responding to a shots fired call, one of the things that went through my mind was who had the firearm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to know who is it that's... Who's got the gun in their hand?
Who's got the gun? Are they a good guy or are they a bad guy? I think I mentioned to you before when I was actively teaching CHL classes, and I'll be teaching some more in 2013, but I'm just not doing them right now. I disarmed 2 CHL holders while I was a municipal police officer.
Mm-hmm.
One stuck his gun in the front of his pants openly and demanded a paycheck from his boss on a construction site. You know, that's an obvious no-no. Even if the boss owed him money, you can't, you know, use your gun to bully him into paying you.
Right, right.
And the other I temporarily disarmed because I found out about 2/3 of the way through the traffic stop that he had failed to inform me that he had a CHL and that he was carrying a firearm. I could care less that he had a CHL. I could care less that he had a firearm. But I asked him, why didn't you tell me that you were on? Well, I just forgot. Yeah, it didn't seem like a very good reason to me. I said, you know, go back to your vehicle, and we're going to place your weapon in the vehicle and come back here and talk to me.
Yeah, I forgot seems pretty lame.
Exactly. And so after our interview was complete and he signed his copy of the citation, he went on his way and I went on mine. I've never worried about people with permits or even law-abiding citizens without permits. I've never worried about them having firearms. It never crossed my mind. It usually seems like if there's going to be a bad guy with a gun, I'm going to know about it pretty quick.
Right.
So, the only problem I had with guy number two was that he just did not inform me. And even then, I didn't report him. I didn't take his permit. At the time, it was a 90-day suspension for a failure to notify. Okay. I didn't do any of that stuff to him. I did tell him, even I know, and I wasn't a CHO instructor at the time, even I know that when I'm carrying with a permit that I've got to inform the officer when I'm asked for identification. You know, too, because you went through a 10-hour class. Don't forget again. So.
Interesting.
Anyway, and the immortal words of Forrest Gump, all I have to say about that.
No, well, thanks for sharing those. I mean, the reason I wanted you to share those is I want people who really don't know what it's like when an officer of the law gets a call that their shot's been fired. You've given us an interesting perspective. I want to ask you something to kind of close off this show here. I know this is going to be speculation, John. You don't know because you weren't there. What do you think was going through those first responders' minds yesterday at that school?
Can I get there fast enough to stop him?
Okay, you want to say that again?
Can I get there fast enough to stop him?
Yeah. I'm sure that's what they were thinking. And see, unfortunately, I make a joke when I open up every show and I say I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And that's a catchy phrase and all that. But think about it, Yeah, those officers were probably thinking, can I get there fast enough to stop him? And they didn't. It's not their fault.
No, it's just the sad facts. Every call that I told you about, of course, that's not all of them. Those are the first ones that came to mind. The shots have already been fired.
Exactly.
I'm responding to a call for service. The few times that I intervened and stopped a crime in progress, man, that was like my birthday and Christmas and Easter rolled into one.
Oh, would you mind talking about that? Can you talk about when you actually stopped a crime in progress?
Sure. It wasn't that long ago, and the one I'm talking about is something pretty simple. It's not that big of a deal. I had a habit as a municipal officer of patrolling neighborhoods. I like to know who lived in the neighborhood, what vehicles they drive, what vehicles to expect at certain houses. You get a whole feel for the area of when people are active, when they're not active. You know where I'm going with that?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was nothing for me to spend an hour or two going to the neighborhood, stopping, shaking hands. Asking people how they were doing, playing with some of the kids, just, officer friendly stuff. Mm-hmm. But the real purpose of that is to learn who belongs and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And, everyone wants to think that burglaries always happen at night.
No, they don't.
Oh, no, they don't.
Most of them happen during the daytime. I know that. The reason I know that is most people know I used to work in the security alarm business, and we had access to all the data showing when burglaries happen, and they happen in broad daylight most of the time.
They happen in broad daylight. They happen when you're at work.
Right.
When your spouse is at work. It actually happened to my best friend's father while he was in bed asleep after working midnight shifts.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yes, sir. But so I'm patrolling a neighborhood that I spend a lot of time in, and I see this guy wheeling a generator, pushing a generator down the street. And, I think to myself, self, that's what I call me. That's not normal behavior.
Okay.
Okay, so of course I stop him, and he gives me a story how he just found it. I'm like, okay, you just don't find a 12-horsepower generator. And while I'm talking with him, another person calls the police department and wants to complain about someone cutting through their backyard, and the person that they're complaining about is dressed identically to the person that I'm talking to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, okay, so he's already cut through, one person's property. And so I began to look around, and this generator had wheels on it. And, being the astute investigator that I am, I followed the tire tracks back to the residence that he took it from.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, here, let me leave these breadcrumbs for you. And so I contacted the owner of the residence after having to search forever and a day and crisscross this and that from, books we have on addresses and names and whatnot. Got a hold of the homeowner. Homeowner came out, wrote a statement, and I put the guy in jail for burglary of habitation.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. Person got their property back. Finding a burglar, like I said, it's like your birthday, Christmas, and Easter rolled into one.
Yeah, it's like you got plenty of gifts. That's the best thing that a police officer can probably go through is to get there in order to be able to stop a crime, correct?
Exactly. And then sometimes there are crimes that you stop just by your sheer presence, being a visible deterrent.
Right.
I've had places where I it's the difference between knowing something and being able to prove it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and there were houses that I knew there was illegal activity occurring inside, but I couldn't exactly prove it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I sure made those customers nervous by running traffic radar on the street right in front of that residence. Evidently, the people that engage in that type of business don't like to pull out from a driveway in front of the police. So, little things that can help keep your neighborhood safe.
Being able to stop crimes, that's kind of like winning the Super Bowl for a police officer, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the sad fact is, like I said, the majority of the time, we are responding to a call for service. I mean, something has already happened. You already have a suspect. You already have a witness. And that's another good topic, Bob. The difference between a complainant and a suspect?
No, what?
The complainant calls first.
Okay. That's right.
Second.
No, well, you're right. You're right.
It's been talked about before. There's been some other notable people that have discussed this. But I know firsthand that when I would get a call, they would tell me, whatever my number was at the time. We'll say 1211. 1211 needs to be en route to this location. Speak with this person. They told me so-and-so did this. So I'm on my way to a residence to speak to a complainant, regardless of whether that person is the actual complainant or not.
Mm-hmm.
Not all bad guys are stupid.
No, I've made the mistake of saying that bad guys are stupid, and that's I'm going to take that back. Not all of them are.
So sometimes I've had one of the funniest ones I had in that regard was three sisters that all jumped on each other. And then they all wanted to come in and file charges on each other. And you talk about paperwork being in a tangle like spaghetti.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. In one report, you've got a complainant and two suspects. In another report, even though the narrative is almost the same, your suspect and complainants flip-flop. And so I was thinking, man, I hope my detective sergeant doesn't beat me over the head with these reports. I think we ended up getting the whole thing evened out. There are a lot of times when the job was boring, so to speak.
Right.
And they talk about those few moments of terror and the hours of boredom.
Right.
I cannot remember a time where I actually, the word or the feeling of terror came into my line of thought. But there were times where you wanted to get somewhere and you wanted to get there right now. You know, there was a definite sense of urgency.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing those. I mean, those are real life stories. And, you know, there's no teacher better than experience. And, John, thanks for sharing your experiences on those. Let's shift gears here a little bit because I want to wrap this up. I don't want it to get too long, but we've got some classes coming up. Both you and I have some training classes coming up. Tell us what you've got coming up.
Well, March 2nd and 3rd, I'm doing a defensive pistol skills in Houston, Texas. And that is all about being able to handle your weapon, handle it efficiently, and being the best marksman that you can be. We covered the fundamentals thoroughly. We covered the draw stroke thoroughly. We cover immediate action. So it's a course that you could never do too many times. It's always good to come back to your foundation and make sure that everything is still squared away. I don't know about in San Antonio, but in Southeast Texas, we have a problem with foundation settling and cracking.
We do here too.
And so, you know, it's never a bad idea to go back and reinspect your foundation, make sure it's good and strong.
Let me interject something. Yes. Defensive pistol skills was the first handgun training class I ever took. It was the first one I had ever taken. A gentleman named Glenn Matthews taught it, who's not with Suarez International any longer. He retired, but he was a tremendous instructor. Had I not taken that class, I don't think I'd be where I am today.
Yeah, it is one of the finest classes that I've ever taken as far as explaining the hows and whys. You know, and I had the basics and fundamentals of firearms training in the military and in the police academy.
Mm-hmm.
Defensive pistol skills explains the how and the why much better than any government-sponsored class I ever took.
Good. And you got some other things coming up, too.
Well, I tell you what. I'm not going to mention my close-range gunfighting because you'll be teaching your first close-range gunfighting class in 2013. So I'll let you talk about that first, Bob.
I'm excited. May 18th and 19th, San Antonio. The same range where you came and taught last year, earlier this year. Some people won't hear this till actually 2013. But anyway, May 18th and 19th, close range gunfighting. I am psyched up. It's the first time I get a chance to teach this class. And I can tell folks who are going to come there and train with me, as usual, you are going to get my absolute best. I'm going to give it my all. I'm going to leave everything on the range. I will not hold anything back. I'll definitely stay within the curriculum, but you're going to get it all from me. So come join me. If you're hearing this and you can register for any of these classes before the end of the year, you do save $50. So go to Suarez International and sign these up before the end of 2012.
You know, Bob, I know you're seasoned a little more than I am, so to speak, by just a few years. You know, I just can't help but feel like a proud father when I hear you talking about close-range gunfighting.
I owe it to you, John. You've taught me well. In full disclosure, John's the one that taught me how to teach this class. I've taken this class as a student twice, and I have helped John teach it twice. So four times now I've been through close-range gunfighting, and thank you, John. Appreciate what you did for me.
You're welcome. I mean, it's a two-way street. I appreciate your support and what you've done and the hard work that you've put in. You know, it's not an easy street, so to speak. You've got to put in the work to be able to do this. You have to understand what you're doing inside and out. And not only be able to understand it and perform it, you have to be able to teach it.
Yep.
There's a lot of folks that can demonstrate, that can maybe show you something, but if you ask them how they did it, they don't have a clue.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. It's not easy to teach it. Now, you've also got, I'm bringing you into San Antonio later in the year to do advanced close-range gunfighting. You're going to be the instructor of that one. Talk about that.
Advanced close-range gunfighting is as far as you can go on a square range. We will hit every angle on the clock face. We'll use the right hand. We'll use the left hand. We'll shoot from our bellies. We'll shoot from our backs. We'll shoot at close intervals. We'll shoot at long distance. Anyone that thinks that a handgun is not effective at 75 to 100 yards, come on out. I'll have you getting hits on demand at 75 yards like it's nothing. And it's one of my favorite classes to teach simply because it is so physical. Now, I'll tell you flat out, November is a nice time of year, but you're going to need to bring a lot of water. You're going to need some protein because you're going to be using it. It's a physical class. You will be shooting on the move. You'll be moving in every direction on the clock face.
Yep. And you're going to be out here. It's a ways off. You're going to be out here next November in San Antonio teaching that.
Absolutely. I also want to mention September 7th and 8th in Houston, Texas, there's a rifle gunfighting class that I'm putting on, and that's an intermediate rifle class. And you learn to use the rifle with both hands. You learn the expedient shooting positions. You learn to shoot on the move with your rifle.
Yep.
Okay. October 19th and 20th, 2013, Dr. John Meade is returning to Texas to teach advanced trauma medicine. Like I was mentioning earlier, at a crime scene, at any kind of incident where you have people injured and the police are there, I'm sorry, I get so used to saying it like that, and the police are there, paramedics, EMTs do not enter the scene until it is secured.
So you've got to be able to administer first aid and secure the scene.
Exactly. One of the main points of the trauma medicine and advanced trauma medicine is that you don't have 5 minutes to wait for the scene to be secured. And it's not going to be secured that fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If there's a problem that needs to be addressed, if you have a loved one that is injured, do you want to wait on paramedics or do you want to take the steps necessary to save their life so that when the paramedics get there, they've got something to work with?
Yeah, no, I don't want to wait on them. I'm going to take that class. And wrapping it up real quickly here, I'd be very remiss if I didn't mention this. There's already several people signed up, so do not procrastinate, folks. I am hosting a class I have been waiting for years to take here in San Antonio. April 6th and 7th, I'm hosting Roger Phillips to come to San Antonio to teach point shooting progressions. This is going to involve sighted and unsighted fire. I will be a student. I'll be a host and strictly a student at this class, and I absolutely can't wait. And I do have privy to some of the numbers that Suarez puts out, and I'm not going to give the exact number, but I will tell you there are already quite a few people signed up for this class. Don't procrastinate. That's April 6th and 7th here in San Antonio, point shooting progressions. There'll be a link in the show notes for all these.
Yeah, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but Roger Phillips is one of my favorite instructors. And the reason is he has the ability to push you without pushing you past your limits. I never fail to walk away with a new understanding of something when I train with Roger.
Yeah.
He's like a Energizer bunny. He does not stop. He doesn't slow down. You've heard the course described before as drinking from a fire hose. It's absolutely correct. I've got students that have taken PSP 3 and 4 times. It is a very fun class. It's a very exciting class. You learn to do things that other people say aren't possible.
Oh, and I'm sure it's not going to be my only time taking it, but it's definitely going to be my first, and I'm looking forward to that very much.
You know, people in San Antonio, you need to show up and see this. You really do. I mean, if Orange, Texas can sell out courses that brought it were brought in for Roger Phillips, San Antonio, don't get shown up. I mean, you don't know what you don't know. When you see this curriculum, when you work these drills, you will have a whole new understanding of the fight continuum.
Well, not only just San Antonio, but if I'm not mistaken, this is going to be the only time in 2013 that Roger is coming to Texas to teach this class.
Right. I do have him coming back to Texas in the fall to teach long gun point shooting aggressions.
Yeah, but not the handgun.
Not the handgun.
So this is your one and only shot. San Antonio is a fun place to visit. And come on over. I mean, this is going to be the only time in Texas, and then he'll be coming back. When is he coming back to do long gun point shooting?
It's going to be in November of 2013.
Okay.
We're looking at November or late October. I've got to recheck it again. I hate to misspeak, but it's going to be the fall of 2013 because, you know, in Southeast Texas, we're looking at, you know, mild temperatures that time of year. And it's going to be in Houston once everything has been nailed down. Of course, it'll be on the Swords International website, and I'm sure we'll speak about it on the show. But we've found some interesting things about some of the equipment that we're using, and it's going to fall right into this type of course. There's a lot of exciting things in the works for Texas. And I'm happy to be a part of it, and I'm happy that you're a part of it too, Bob. And for the listeners out there, you know, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Well, John, thanks for coming on and talking about your personal stories. That was quite meaningful. Thank you very much for doing that. And keep your chin up. I know this is hard. It's hard. We're, you know, at the time that we're recording this, probably hard for everybody to keep our chin up. But we have to do it. There's nothing else we can do.
You know, one of the things that helps me quite often is, every day is prayer, quite honestly.
Amen.
And I don't care who knows it. I'm not ashamed of it. Like I said, I'm very angry about what happened. I wish I could have been there to prevent it.
You know, that's the first thing I thought of. And in closing, I want to say, I wish I was there. I wish I was there. Just to blow that SOB away. I'm sorry. That's how angry I am. And I would have shown, I'm sorry, I would have shown no mercy on this guy. None.
You know, and once again, you know, big time prayers out for the parents and the faculty and everything that, you know, all the victims of this crime. You know, I do understand one portion of it. And it's something that you can only get your strength in the Lord to deal with.
Exactly. Amen. John, thanks again. Thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Bob, and God bless.
You too. Well, John Payne, thank you very much. That was a terrific interview. Again, you won't regret it if you take one of John's classes. So if you can make it to advanced close-range gunfighting in San Antonio, that would be cool, or any of the other classes that we talked about. And, of course, you heard me talk about the Suarez classes that I will be teaching in 2013. And John Hottaway and I covered that last Sunday as well. Let me give you a little bit of a preview as to what's coming up next year on the Handgun World podcast. I've got some pretty cool products that have been sent to me. One of them is called a Sturdy Belt, a terrific concealed carry belt. And I will be establishing a web page on at handgunworld.com about the Sturdy Belt, one of the best belts I've ever had a chance to try. White Dog Holsters. If you are looking for a terrific outside-the-waistband concealed carry Kydex holster that's also good for IDPA and USPSA, check out whitedogholsters.com. Devin has sent me some sample product. I'll be talking some more about that. All of these products I'm using and I'm testing, and I can attest, or I can tell you that these are terrific products. Please don't forget about my Everyday Carry store. Especially if you want to buy Glenn Tate's book, you can go to the recommended books page at handgunworld.com. You can buy Glenn's book through Amazon. I will earn a small commission. It'll help him help my, support my show. My everyday carry store, I just added some cool stuff to it that I'm using. Everything on there that you see on my everyday carry store, I use. And I personally endorse those products. The only benefit I get from endorsing those products is if you buy them from Amazon through my link at my everyday carry store, Amazon sends me a small little commission. So check out my EDC store. There's a flashlight that I just ordered, the 511 ATAC L2 flashlight. I now have the L1 and the L2. Basically, one of them is just a smaller version of the other. Some of you have been asking me about speed sights. Well, as you know, I no longer sell speed sights. I'm very disappointed with the customer service and the lack of communication. But I got to tell you, the Trijicon HD sights are just as good, in my opinion. The only advantage the speed sights have over the Trijicon HDs is you do kind of get the crosshairs concept, which I really like with speed sights. But hey, you know, if a person can't deliver with customer service or with communication, no matter how good the product is, it's just not going to be viable for the consumer. An excellent alternative are Trijicon HDs. The price is coming down. It's about the same price as speed sights. You'll find those on my everyday carry store. Just click the link. Find the picture of the Trijicon HD sights. And if you want to pick up a pair of those, they make them for almost every pistol out there. I like them. I like the ones with the orange front. But they've also got, I think, a green front sight and a yellow front sight. So check that out at my everyday carry store, my EDC store. Don't forget about the Shooters Club. There's still time left. I'm sending $5 to the Gun Rights Radio Network for every member that signs up before or on December 31st. This will support the Gun Rights Radio Network. Next year, we need to heavily support the Second Amendment Foundation and the NRA. You also need to get active, folks. Next year, I plan on writing my U.S. representative, my United States senator, my local state rep, my state senator, and Governor Rick Perry. I am going to pressure all of them to not vote for ridiculous anti-gun legislation. You please need to do the same. They are bringing the fight to us, folks. It's coming. Don't be naive. Don't sit back and think that it's automatically going to go away. This tragedy was not the gun's fault. We also need to financially support them. Please renew your NRA membership. I don't gain anything by you doing that. Please help the Second Amendment Foundation. I don't gain anything by that. I want you to keep your rights, folks. I want you to keep your rights. And these are the big, powerful organizations that are helping us do that. With that said, this podcast has been long enough. Once again, Merry Christmas to all of you and your family. You'll hear from me again shortly after the first of the year. My name is Bob Main. You've just listened to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. A practical show because I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, folks, the loudest sound that any shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.